Greetings, Game Cola faithful, and welcome to the Game Cola podcast. This is podcast number 181. Complaints about this podcast? You have none. I am your host and podcast commander, Joseph Martin, joined by...
I'm Blue Rider, and I have nothing to complain about at the moment.
I'm Alex the Jetty Jitterzak, and I just waited for that motorcycle to drive by.
I'm John Risley, and I was trying my best not to lose my absolute when that motorcycle drove by.
Jetty, where are you going? It's time for the podcast.
I know, I'm sorry. I got places to be.
I told you to get in. We're going to record a podcast.
Yeah, well, I had
you
to...
You got on your motorcycle instead.
I'm sorry, Joe. It won't happen again.
He needed milk so badly.
Jetty, trying to run away with the gaming scoop of the century that you have here for us, which is that, guys, get this, Jetty played a video game.
I did.
And guess how he feels about it.
Yeah. I don't like it.
How do you keep doing this to yourself, Jetty? How do you keep doing this?
I don't know. I thought that I was going to like it. I actually, you know, like, if you recall, I nominated Front Mission First Remake for Remake of the Year back, you know, a couple of months ago when we were doing the Video Game Awards. I would like to, you know, pull my nomination.
You lied to us?
Throw it on the back of the motorcycle?
Yeah. Man, so, and there's like a whole series of events that lead up to me playing this. Like, it's funny, actually, is that it went on sale at a moment that I was thinking about it. That, like, I hadn't thought about the game. You know, I mean, I had thought about it during the awards, but it didn't win anything, which is fine. Yeah, I hadn't played the game yet. I was just excited about it. And, you know, I'm a huge fan. I don't know if I've said this before, but I am a huge fan of Front Mission as a series. The original Front Mission is a great game. I've played it multiple times. You know, Front Mission Gun Hazard is one of my, you know, all-time favorite games. Front Mission 4, I have a weird review poem on the site.
on the video game website, gamecola.net?
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
The letter G, the letter A, the letter M, the letter E.
the letter cola.
Yeah.
The letter dot, the letter net.
Yeah. Yeah, and like I will always think fondly of Front Mission 3, where at the very beginning of the game, after you do the training mission, your friend comes up and he's like, "Hey, do you want to go to the mall?" And you have the option of either like staying late at work at the military base or going with your friend to the mall. And this choice changes everything about the game. That either, you know, spoiler alert on a game from what, like 2002 or something, oh man, or like 1998, I don't even remember when this game came out. It's for the PlayStation. And yeah, that like either you go with your friend to the mall and you end up joining like the rebels, or you stay late at work and you end up fighting for the military. The two factions is chosen by this option. So anyway, the point is, so I was watching Pat Labor because I went to VHS Fest and I got Pat Labor, the first movie, on VHS. And instead of risking ruining my VHS copy that I, you know, just paid 10 American dollars for, I instead watched the copy that I downloaded back in like 2004, and I enjoyed it. I really like it. And it has a lot
Sorry, hold on. You purchased a VHS.
Yeah.
And then you were like, great, I have this VHS. Of course, I'm not going to use the VHS tape to play video because that might damage it. Luckily, I already have a way to watch this movie.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So why did you buy the VHS? So you could say, I have the VHS?
In some ways. So there's two parts to that, which is, one, I just love having a VHS collection. I have a lot of...
All right.
Godspeed.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, right, yeah, yeah.
I still do.
Yes, and, I do actually appreciate it as a format, and I do enjoy watching VHS tapes, like, on an actual CRT TV. It is a beautiful thing. The quality is actually pretty good when you watch it on a CRT TV. However, the VCR that I have hooked up currently, the one that actually works and will not eat tapes, is not hooked up to my CRT TV, so it ends up looking like really bad on like a modern.
I see. So LCD. It's not that you'll never do it, just yeah. not in this particular. Okay, I was gonna say it's like I have nothing against liking VHS tapes and playing them to see the video in that particular quality, but that is decidedly not what you did.
Yeah, yeah. No, I thought about it, but instead I watched the copy that I had downloaded, you know, 20 years ago. So anyway, the point is, Pat Labor, I really appreciate that they, like, for being a, you know, giant robot show, an anime, if you will, it mixes a lot of, you know, different kind of mech types, which includes, like, cars and stuff, and that they have scenes where, like, oh yeah, there's, like, people who are on a mission together with a robot, right? Like, if
are
you watch something...
Front?
I was going to say, we're getting people there. On a yeah. mission in front of other people.
So the thing is that like if you watch Gundam, right, like you don't see a lot of like cars together with Gundams, right? That like most shows that have...
Because then it would be Transformers.
Well, I'm just saying it's like you don't see a lot of tanks, right, in like a giant robot show. Yeah, yeah. You don't see a lot of, you know, alternative types of... you know, like anything that you would normally see in the real world is just like completely abandoned in preference of giant robots. Meanwhile, Pat Labor actually has a good mix. And that was reminding me of Front Mission, where they do kind of the same thing. It's like you can actually, there are characters that drive little cars around, right? There's Pee-wee, who drives the support truck in the first game. You know, and there's plenty of missions where like you are fighting tanks or like you have tanks that are like automatically controlled, you know, NPC characters or whatever. Like, these kinds of things happen in the world of Front Mission. So I was thinking about it after watching Pat Labor. So then I was digging through all of my games, trying to find Front Mission 4, one of my favorites that I recall, you know, from back when I had started Game Cola and I was actually doing reviews. I could not find it. However, I found Front Mission Evolved, which is a first-person shooter, or no, first third-person shooter from... the early 2000s. It's an Xbox game. And I played it for about 10 minutes, and then it just glitched, and I could not play the game. Like, not even that, like, you know, it errored and, like, shut down or something, but that I, like, did a jump, and suddenly I was, like, outside, like, you know, being that it's a third-person shooter, you can see the robot, but suddenly I was, like, stuck inside the robot. But I could, like, still see, like, my arms, and I was just kind of floating there. And all of the NPCs started ignoring me, and I'm trying to, like, move around and stuff. But I'm stuck facing forward, but I can move directly left and right. I can't turn, but I can move left and right and front and back. I still interact with obstacles, and I'm, like, locked at the height that I was at the jump. So I'm, like... trying to maneuver. I'm just like roaming around the map, going like through all these buildings. It was a cool glitch. I wouldn't say that the game was good.
I could see how those two thoughts could coexist at the same time.
For those of you just tuning in at this point in the podcast, Jay's describing how he went to the grocery store last week.
Yeah, well, I had to get milk on my motorcycle. but yeah, so I was not sad. I was not disappointed that the game glitched and that I was not able to continue because I was not particularly impressed by this game. So I continued digging through the boxes, and I did eventually find Front Mission 4. And man, I remembered this game very fondly. I remember, you know, comparing it to like some of the other ones and having it has sort of quality of life improvements for tactical games, because for anyone who is familiar with, you know, kind of historical tactical games, it is a lot of just like click this menu, click that menu, move this guy around, watch them do something, you know, watch them move over there, watch them attack this guy, click this menu, click that menu, wait for these guys to move. Like, it is a lot of just time spent selecting stuff.
And isn't it also a lot of, here's a percentage that what you want to happen will actually happen?
Yes. Well, depending on the game, but yes, that does factor into a lot of tactics games. So Front Mission 4 had some improvements where your characters are kind of friends, and that like when they do certain actions, you can have these like linked actions so that if you're attacking, the other people who are friends with them, like if they're better friends, they'll have more of a chance to like support them and do the attack actions. So like essentially what that does is it speeds it up so that instead of saying this guy, attack that guy, this guy, attack that guy, this guy, attack that guy, like if they're all in range, they just all do it on one round. So like there's none of this like, oh, well, shift to, you know, the attacking, you know, camera view, then show this guy turn over that way and then he attacks, then go back to the, you know, play camera view, then go through the menu, blah, blah, blah. They just do it all. And then everyone is out of their like action points, and then the round is over. It's like, okay, good. I did all of the things that I was going to do anyway, but I didn't have to select, you know, 8 different menus to do this. So those are good. There's a lot of improvements. There's a lot of like interesting, you can have different, like instead of just being, well, I shoot this guy with a missile and I shoot that guy with a gun, there's different like status effects and stuff. So for Front Mission 4 was pretty good. However, it is still a tactical game, and the aforementioned percentages. You know, I think the thing is that if you're playing a game like Final Fantasy and your character misses, you don't think about the fact that if the computer were to tell you what the percent chance was, it would have been 95%, but you still missed, right? Like, it doesn't tell you. And so when you miss, and you miss twice in a row, you don't really think much about it, right?
Because you don't know. Like, maybe you were supposed, like, maybe there's some, if you don't have all the numbers on hand, you don't necessarily know how often you're supposed to miss.
Right.
Or if, like, something has changed that would make it miss.
But, man, I was playing a mission in Front Mission 4, and one of my characters, he had a 90% chance to hit. Mm-hmm. And he missed, which is fine. It's 1 in 10. So then I moved him closer, and he had a 95% chance to hit. And he missed, which is 1 in 20, which is still, you know, kind of, it's fine. Then I moved him closer, and he had a 99% chance to hit, and he missed. And then on the next round, he missed again, and then he died. And so I feel like that's kind of the big thing about it, right? Like, there, like, you have to think of, like, we can just talk about what a game is supposed to be about, right? Like, it's supposed to be that you have some kind of a goal and there's a challenge that prevents you from meeting that goal. And in most JRPGs, right, usually, you know, turn-based battle, you are meeting random encounters that are just kind of supposed to be, like, in some ways it's training you, like, oh, you get a chance to use all of your skills and whatever in kind of a low-stakes part of the game. It also kind of does some item management and that kind of stuff, like how far can you make it through this dungeon? Can you actually make it all the way to the next town? That kind of, you know, those kinds of questions.
It might also like signal like certain things that the boss character will do and like make sure that you're familiar with like a certain status condition or something.
Yeah, yeah. And so there's, you know, elements of, well, training you, you know, for what you're expected to do, things that you might encounter later, you know, preparing you for a boss battle, or kind of like, you go all the way through the dungeon so that you can't just like stock up on all the items in the shop, then immediately go into the boss battle. You have to go through this dungeon, which is going to like, you know, bring in item management and kind of like make it a bit more questionable. Like, what state are you going to be when you get to the boss? You know, were you expecting the boss and you had your health filled, or were you not expecting it and he suddenly pops out of nowhere? Like, there's a lot of different things that you can do with this kind of setup. But the key here is that there are normal battles in which you can kind of, if you have difficulty with the game, you can make it easier for yourself by grinding. This is a, right, you know, classic JRPG game development element.
Correct.
Tactics games are basically 100% boss battles if you think about it in that context, that there is very little like opportunity for grinding. And if you do, it is basically playing a full half hour to 45 minute boss battle for what is effectively very little, like, reward. That, like, usually when you do, if they're, like, in front mission, there's simulator battles. But, like, they kind of give you very little, and, like, usually, oh, they actually don't give you any money. Or, like, in, you know, Ogre Battle Tactics, you can have your player characters fight against each other. But, like, the amount of EXP that you get from these battles is not the same as what you would get from a real battle. So, like, you end up spending, like, several hours. Were you to struggle with a real battle and then want to, like, go back and, like, grind for a bit? So it very rapidly loses its fun. And this kind of leads into, sorry, Front Mission First Remake, right? So as I was playing Front Mission 4 and I was thinking, man, this is actually not as good as I remember. Maybe I should go back and play the first game because I remember that being, like, a better balance somehow. That, like, I as much as it had less quality of life kind of stuff, I feel like the playing of the game was a bit more polished somehow in these kinds of respects. And at that moment, I got an email from Nintendo letting me know that one of the items on my wish list had gone on sale. Front Mission First Remake was on sale for 50% off.
This is a harrowing journey we've been on so far, and it's still going.
Yeah, no, yeah, sorry.
So is this also a tactics? Is the first remake?
Yeah,
the remake of the first game. The game that the game that this is a remake of, which is also the first game in the series.
Yeah.
That's also a tactics game.
Yeah. So like it started
just to add to the tactics discussion. To mix up the voices a bit. I feel like the other thing about tactics games is that they're usually very all or nothing when it comes to their percentages. Like, there's not a spectrum, right? Like, I feel like in some cases where you have randomness involved, usually you have, like, some guaranteed way to make progress in, like, a more standard RPG, right? Where, like, you might have, you know, big risk, big reward attacks that might miss, but if they hit, they do a lot of damage, for example, versus like, oh, this will definitely hit, but you're not going to do nearly as much damage. And maybe even within that, oh, you know, this enemy dies in 10 health and this attack does 9 to 11 damage, right? Yeah. And so you have some element of, like, you're at least making progress. But I feel like a lot of tactics games have situations where it's like you either make progress or literally do nothing. Right? It's not just that you missed four times. It's that you missed four times. You didn't have an option that would have prevented you from missing. And each of those four times you make essentially negative progress because then, you know, the enemies get a chance to attack you.
And that's kind of the big thing about it is like, okay, so I missed five times in a row, whatever. But like, then he died. Like, it kind of, I have to compare it to like, playing a regular JRPG versus playing Pokemon, right? Like, the battles in Pokemon are over very quickly. Like, usually, like, if you are equal levels, right, of your Pokemon versus a target Pokemon, it's going to take, what, like, maybe 3 to 5 rounds, and one of you is, I can't say dead, right? You've fainted. But like 3 to 5 rounds is kind of like the going rate, and that quite often, you know, based on like if you're like 2 levels over and you have the advantage of typing, it's just one hit, right? Like it's over with only a difference of like 2 levels, and that you can just like grind for a little bit and just like power over everything with type advantages and so on, like when you get to that point. And so that's kind of how tactics games, again, because like tactics games are kind of boring if it's just a lot of like going through menus and like clicking on stuff all the time. So the other way to speed it up is just to make them die very quickly, right? But the problem is, and this gets me again to Front Mission First Remake, I need to sit down and play the first game again because I do not remember things dying this quickly. And when I say that, what I mean is, in my first mission, right, this is like the tutorial mission that kind of like teaches you, oh, this is the general, you know, concept of how to play the game. My guy lost his gun arm in the first round due to the counterattack. So I got one shot off, and then I am disabled that I can do, like, there's other characters. So then I go up and I try to attack with a different guy, and he also gets one shot, his arm blown off. And then the only guy remaining in this mission who still has weapons gets just completely killed in two rounds. So now I have nobody who can do anything. This is the tutorial mission. And just basically by luck, because, okay, so one thing about how Front Mission works, usually if you're playing Final Fantasy Tactics or something, your character just has HP in Front Mission. Your robot has HP for each of the arms, for the legs, and for the body. But the concept, right, like you shoot with a machine gun, it shoots five shots, it can hit any of these five parts of your body. Five?
Yeah, the five parts of the body.
Yeah.
That exist. There's only five of them.
The left and right arm.
Organs don't count.
The body and the legs. All five. Yes. Mm-hmm. Sorry. All four. Like the chances of it all hitting the same part of the body and just knocking it all out, like, it should be limited. So the concept that, like, not only did all five shots hit, but they all hit one part and completely destroyed it, you know, it's slightly frustrating, perhaps. So then I restart the mission, you know, fine, whatever. Then the second time I get through, like, the first part of the mission, and then, oh no, the boss robot comes out, and he just immediately kills my guy. Just, like, one shot, shoots a missile, hits him in the body, kills him, I have to restart the tutorial battle for a second time. Like, I wish I could say it was a skill issue. I wish that I was just bad at the game. I wish there was something that I could do to be better at the game, to not have this happen, but it is literally just the luck of the draw.
It's tricky. It seems, because, like, these games are from, like, the remake is more recent, obviously, but, like, the games themselves, right, seem like they go from, like, late 90s to early 2000s to maybe mid 2000s, at least in the scope that we've talked about.
Yeah,
about that.
So, but I feel like I'm remembering when, like, at some point, like, an XCOM game came out. There have been a few. I don't know if I doubt this is the most recent one, because I want to say it's, like, somewhere on the order of 10 years ago. But even still, like, it's the exact same, you know, issues, right, that people have, where it's, like, all the same complaints. Like, you know, the percentages, and, you know, you can have, like, the perfect battle plan, and it all goes bad. And sure, it's like, oh, well, that's what real fighting would be like. And it's like, cool. But I also would like to play the video game.
Yeah.
And if there's actually nothing I can do, I feel like that's not the best the video game is not the best medium for it, when that's the lesson you're supposed to learn in every single encounter.
Yeah, it's like,
in the video game.
It's like, I'm going into a fight. I wasn't planning on getting kicked in the nuts. Doesn't mean I have to like it when it happens.
That lesson only works, like, once, and then it's still the entire video game.
Yep.
That you have to do. And I feel like also there's a lot of, like, I don't know if it would be called, but you're, like, restarting, right? And, like, when you restart, you're bringing in information from the last one, right? Including things that, like, you would not have been able to predict, right? Like, oh, there's going to be a big boss guy after this, and it's going to be right here. So I'm going to, you know, make sure my guys are in this particular spot. And then it's like, well, that kind of, like, then it feels like the challenge is not the single encounter, right? It's like the whole from beginning to end, but, like, it's almost balanced within that scope, right? Like, it's not you tried, like, failing the first time is, like, it baked into the design almost, just because you will learn information through playing it once that essentially makes it possible to beat it a lot of the time. I feel like this is, I don't know every game, every level, no, but like this is the trap that I feel like a lot of these kinds of games fall into.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, what are we doing here, man?
Yeah.
Even like modern day, like hard games with like Souls games or whatnot, it's like, it's a trope where the first boss you fight, you're supposed to lose to. And it's like, that teaches the player to be on their toes all the time and whatnot. And it's like become tradition at this point. And it's like super easy to tell you're supposed to lose at this boss because his health is barely going down. He's moving way faster than you can. It's like, okay. So it's like, even before you die, you can tell, okay, I'm supposed to lose to this guy.
But there's a big difference. There's a big difference with that, which is that when you try again in a tactics game, you're not necessarily, like, there are certain things, right? But there's a lot of stuff where it's just like, oh, the dice rolled in my favor this time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen with the, I mean, like, especially because, like, there's random things that happen in, like, Dark Souls bosses. And, like, oh, you know, this attack pattern's easier for me to dodge, and so I'll have a better shot if this boss does this, happens to do this attack pattern more than that attack pattern.
Yep.
Right? So there's still some of that in there.
Correct.
But, like, in, especially when you're so aware of the discrete probabilities involved in these tactics games, because they tell you very explicitly.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it even if you better position yourself, it almost feels worse if then you also get better luck, because then you don't know if it was your better skill, like the skill improvement, or if you were just luckier, right? Like, that doesn't feel satisfying to me, right? If I'm going to improve, then I want it to be purely of my own abilities. Also, humans in general are very bad at internalizing percentages. And I almost wonder, each game should have, games like that should have a like a switch, right? Because some people would want it to be completely accurate. But they should have a switch that's like, not the actual percentage it is, but the percentage it feels like.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure they've studied this mathematically about like what different percentages feel like. Right? Like, I know in Pokemon, you were bringing this up, but like in competitive Pokemon, where like, you know, in a regular Pokemon game, oh, you miss a move, you've lost a little bit of time, but most of the time you're still fine. In competitive, like that opportunity cost is a little bit higher.
Yeah.
And, you know, moves that are like 70% are like famous for never hitting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like 7 out of 10 feels like a 50-50. And so, like, that's an element, too. Like, you can tell someone the percentage, but, like, that's not going to land in the brain
like,
the right way.
Yeah, like, hearing 90% sounds like it's guaranteed to hit. And you have to realize, like, it's 1 in 10, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, 1 in 10 is not... Like, if you tell somebody you have a 1 in 10 chance of missing, and then you tell somebody you have a 90% chance of hitting, those feel completely different. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. And so it's like, that's another thing with the tactics games, where like they have this, it's, I don't know if it, how necessary it is, right? Like, would it even be better if instead of like a literal percentage number, there was like some kind of, there were just these like discrete levels.
Oh, if it just said you have a good chance of hitting or a bad chance
like
of
likely,
hitting.
Yeah. Like
a good chance of sucking.
And then you just make those tiers, you know, not necessarily linear.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would be better. Yeah, it gets to that point where it's like, you know, there were some conversations about this too, like difficulty sliders that are like invisible and they work really well as long as you don't notice they're happening. Like, I think it was like Resident Evil 4 or something where like, depending on how well you're playing the game, like how many times you've died, the enemy, you'll have like more enemies or less enemies spawn.
Yeah.
And it feels really good until you know they're doing it. And then at that point, you get back to a challenge and you realize two of the enemies are gone. And you're like,
yeah,
stop it.
It's the same thing. Like, you know, the more overt is like you're playing, you know, Mario, then they give you, oh, do you want the power up that makes it that you beat the game? Do you want that one?
Yeah.
Does that make you feel good? And it's like, no, I don't, like, even if you want to, like, skip a level, that doesn't feel like a good way to skip the level.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and I feel like they've by just making everything, making it easier for you to just, like, pick and choose, right, and having, like, general criteria for unlocking next levels instead of you have to beat the level before it, right? Like, you have to collect so many of these stars, and even if you can't just skip a level, it gives you a lot more options. I also feel like tactics games like this don't give you, when it comes to the encounter, I guess sometimes they do, but I guess, like, in Front Mission, is it, like, essentially a linear set of missions, and then you have the opportunity to do these, like, simulations to get
some
XP, or is it, do they give you, like, more options of, like, the encounters that you can have?
Yeah, it's mostly just, like, a straightforward, this is the next one in line, right? That once you've completed that next story mission, you go on to the next story mission, and that's just kind of the end of it. Like,
you know what somehow succeeds in this, though? Because, you know, I never really hear people complain about it, but, like, Fire Emblem, right? Like, Fire Emblem is basically this.
Yeah.
But people don't complain about Fire Emblem in this way, I feel like.
I've never actually...
I think it's because you always do damage. I feel like that's it. I feel like you always do damage in Fire Emblem. And maybe there's just randomness about, like, how much you do, like, if you get a critical hit. And, like, that feels... I really think it comes down to... A lot of the frustration comes down to this, like, binary... Either a lot of damage or nothing.
Yeah.
Which is kind of endemic in tactics games. And even if... I feel like if you made more of it, right, you just make three categories. One is, like, you all, you know, do max, you do, like, a middling, and then nothing, and just make the nothing extra smaller, right? And then, like, kind of shift everything that way. I feel like that would just feel a lot better.
And,
like, if you felt more like you were just doing, even if you weren't getting everything you wanted, at least you're making forward progress.
And Front Mission kind of has a bit of that built in because, you know, as I was saying, like, you get a machine gun, it shoots, you know, between, like, 4 and 10 shots, right? And each of those has an 80% chance of hitting, and each of those can hit any of the, you know, the left, the right, the body, or the legs. So, like, there's some variability in what ends up happening that, like, one of your characters might end up living because they just happen to get their legs shot off instead of getting their body just, you know, destroyed. Oh, because, again, like, you have a weapon in your left hand or some other thing in your right hand, or if your body gets destroyed, you're just gone. So you could just end up having the luck that all 8 shots just landed directly on your body and you're dead. But, like, or it could be that, you know, 2 of the shots missed, and all of the others were, like, evenly distributed throughout your body and basically didn't really do anything. So it's kind of built in, except if you're using, like, a sniper rifle or any other, like, one-shot rifle-style gun, where, like, usually, you know, the machine gun will have, like, a 70% chance to hit, but it has 5 shots, whereas, like, the, you know, regular rifle will have, like, a 90% chance to hit, but it only gets 1. And that's where it gets frustrating, and you just say, I am never using a rifle. There is no point to use a rifle. Although, like, again, in the original game, if a rifle had, you know, a 75% chance to hit, and it would do 13 damage, right? Whereas, like, a machine gun would have, like, a 60% chance to hit, but it had 5 shots that do 2 damage each, right? Like, you kind of get this point where over time, even if you do miss with the rifle, over time you're doing more damage with the rifle, right? Like, even if you miss occasionally. The problem is that in order to speed up what they know are boring battles, they just give you less HP. So it takes fewer rounds.
Cut, print, shit the game.
Like, man, there's a lot of things that I have problems with the Front Mission First remake, because, like, it comes down to polish, right? The first game was very polished. Even if it was a little bit boring by modern standards, at the time, you know, people accepted that they were going to be sitting here clicking through menus for several hours. That was just kind of like what they were accepting. And modern, you know, gamers don't really enjoy that as much. So their method of like speeding that up, instead of improving the quality of life like they did with Front Mission 4, was just to give you less HP and you either win or lose a lot more quickly.
But I guess, yeah, that's one way to do it.
And I will also say, the art in this game looks like it's from DeviantArt from 2004. There are background music where it is obvious when it loops that they actually like, I know the MP3s have problems with like being consistent of where it ends, right? Like there's issues when you try to have looping with an MP3. It just skips like a full beat. That like there is a point at the end of the song where like they had it loop like three times in the MP3, and then on the third time, it just misses a beat. For a song
that I feel like the thing you're supposed to do is like let it fade out and then come back in after the,
or just use a different format. I don't.
That's also true.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but yeah. You
those
can,
MP3s
yeah.
are so small, Jetty.
You can have like
you
what
make
an OGM.
Me uploaded an MP3 when people are replaying the podcast. It also could skip a beat. Did you ever think about that?
Yeah, no, I have considered the export quality that we use when transferring these audio files. Should we be using the medium preset, or should we be, you know, aiming for a higher audio quality?
I have a like preset in Sony Vegas that's the podcast MP3 preset.
Yeah,
and it's the stats that you told me many years ago.
Yeah. Yep.
You were like, these are the stats you should have. And so I did it.
It is.
Also, yeah. While we're talking about podcast data, stop sending me dual channel audio.
Do I?
You don't need to do it. Not you. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
People send me dual channel audio. It's yes. unnecessary. It's too big.
I do remember the days where...
You're talking to me?
I don't know. Whoever sends it to me, I forget immediately.
I am.
Okay.
But.
Back when we recorded on Skype.
I free Skype recorder.
Man, and wait, was that it? I'm trying to remember what we
yeah,
used.
Yeah, that was the name of the tool.
Oh,
I free
man.
Skype recorder.
I forgot about
and would
that.
Record your audio.
In the
like
left.
The,
yeah.
In the left. And then everybody else's audio, which was just like recording the speaker, right? Like it didn't
yeah,
have
exactly, yeah.
any extra information. It was just like the speaker.
And so occasionally.
And I remember like you could only, like if you wanted to silence, it was just like, is it either you yeah. or the other people talking? And if there other people were talking over each other, there was nothing you could do.
Yep. And we would occasionally accidentally export it. You know, we being me, being that I was the podcast commander at the time. Somebody would forget to set it to mono before exporting. And you would end up with a podcast where I was in the left and everybody else was not. So, Blue.
Yeah.
How about video games?
Have you played a tactical video game, Blue?
I played Midnight Suns.
Is that
it is.
Tactics?
It is.
Is that Fire Emblem? XCOM? Is what like? Is it Fire Emblem? Is it XCOM? Is it Front Mission? I guess.
I think it's more like XCOM, isn't it?
Kinda. People were upset that it was XCOM, but. With cards.
Oh.
But
X-card.
It worked really well because it removed the what you were just complaining about, the chance, because it's superheroes, so they were like, they made a build where they were designed the game to have that, like XCOM, because it was the same people. And they realized, hey, this feels awful. It feels awful that Iron Man or Spider-Man or Captain America is trying to punch someone and they just completely whiff it.
Yeah, yep. Yeah.
So they're like, okay, well, let's remove that and let's try to do a different form of randomization. And so they have, each hero has, like, cards and it's like a deck building game, I guess. Well, not really. Like, you get cards outside of combat, and you change your deck there, and, like, it's a loadout, I guess. And so you get a random amount of moves each turn, or a random set of moves each turn. And you like, upgrade so that you can, like, replace one card per turn, and then, like...
Isn't this Battle Network?
Kinda.
It sounds exactly like... I mean, obviously, the fight phase would be different, but, like, you create a set of moves that you can do, and then you get into the battle, and it gives you some subset of that set of moves that you put in.
So it's Battle Network and XCOM mixed together, I guess.
Right, it's more XCOM in the actual, like, fight part, right?
If you, I haven't if you actually, have to, like, played much XCOM, but, that's what everyone called it when it was first, like, shown.
You have a grid, and you, like, go to this position on the grid, and then try to attack anybody in
there's
range.
Not really a grid. It's sort of, like, it's not exactly that, like, you can move, and it's not on a grid, but that you have a certain amount you can move, and so it's a little bit more flexible, but similar idea, yeah.
Okay. The other tactics game that ended up being very popular, now that I'm remembering, it was Mario and Rabbids. Remember that?
Yes, yeah. I did play a little bit of that.
Did I talk about that on the podcast at all?
I think you...
Maybe.
I believe
it's
you
been
did.
A while.
I vaguely recall you talking about it.
Yeah, because I got it for, like, $12 or something. It was, like, 80%
sales.
Off or something. this was... I actually have, like, a physical copy of it. I'm trying to remember. It was, like, Black Friday, and for whatever reason. Like, it was immediately after the Switch came out, I think. And, yeah, I picked it up. It was actually a very fun game. I very much enjoyed that game. It's been a while
since
I played.
We just had an earthquake here. Like, someone said some blasphemy. Jenny, liking a video game?
Oh, no, I was concerned for you for a second, because I know that you live in California.
Oh, so, no. I was doing a bit.
I was thinking earlier while you were talking, I was like, I'm going to have to start a game called a tradition where each year one of us is Jedi Secret Santa and we try to find him, like, one video game that just that he likes.
So,
but it has to be one he hasn't played before.
Yeah.
Well, also, I thought that if it's a video game that I liked, that then nobody else will like it. It is cursed from then on.
Right. So that means we have to... No, that's only if... Right. If we play,
if I play it first,
Super Mario Odyssey, right? It's if only if you play it first. If I play Super Mario Odyssey and realize that it's a very good video game, and then later you play Super Mario Odyssey,
yeah, you've already
right?
played it, so
with,
yeah.
This is what happened with Breath of the Wild, because you like Breath of the Wild, right?
Yes, yeah,
right. But you started playing Breath of the Wild well after everybody else,
yeah,
did.
Yeah,
right. Then the problem was is that you started playing Tears of the Kingdom before we talked about it. And in fact, this might be my fault because I actually prevented us from talking about it because I still haven't played it and I don't want to be spoiled. That gave it the ability to be bad for Jedi. So this is how it works. It's pretty consistent, right? Like Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, also slightly relevant because it's on the Nintendo Switch Online now. But, you know, everybody played Pokemon Mystery Dungeon. Everybody already said they liked it. Then Jedi plays it, and Jedi gets to play a good video game. So we just have to find a video game that we like that Jedi has not yet played.
So Midnight Suns. There. Problem solved.
I don't think Jedi likes Marvel.
I think
not the biggest.
Also...
Yeah.
Right, because it's not a guarantee. Jedi may still not like it. But he definitely won't like it if he's the first one to play it, right? I've never heard of Front Mission before Jedi mentioned it. So obviously it's not going to be good.
But it does sound like it is a worse version of Midnight Suns. Is what
granted, Jenny, I just put this in the thing, yeah. But it seems you were not the only one who hated the Front Mission first remake. A lot of people did not like it because it wasn't polished.
Like, man, I want to like it. I actually played it for like a significant amount of time. I actually because they have in it a new mission, right? A new front mission. You get to play as the bad guys. you know, similar to, and it's kind of become a thing for Front Mission, the game, to be able to play as the bad guys. In Front Mission 4, you are like regularly flipping back and forth. In Front Mission 3, you had the option at the beginning of the game to play as one or the other, basically. And so they give you, in Front Mission First Remake, the option to play as the bad guys. Pretty cool. I was excited about it. I gave it a shot. I actually got pretty far into the game. I got to the point where I did start to become overpowered, and then it transitions basically, you know, going back to like Pokemon rules, from me being two levels under and trying to go through every battle to me being two levels over every battle and just kind of plowing through everybody. I wouldn't say that it was more fun after I became more powerful, right? Like, it did not make it more fun of a game just because I was winning. I don't know. Eventually, I just kind of got bored of it. As much as it sounds exciting to play as the enemies, I wouldn't say that the alternate mission was, you know, particularly engaging. It was just kind of all right. John, have you played a tactics game?
I remember back in the day, I got pretty far into Star Wars Empire at War. That was pretty fun. That was so long ago, I can't really recall mechanics about that. I recently, like on a plane ride, I was seeing what I could download on GOG on my Mac, because of all five games on that library that are Mac compatible. One of them was Syndicate.
Okay.
And yeah, I thought it was very interesting, but I haven't had the desire to go back to it. But I really loved the aesthetic, and I actually really dug how slow and methodical it was throughout. But yeah, there's not too many tactics games. I mean, I remember I played a bit of Fire Emblem Sacred Stones when that was released on 3DS, like as part of the Ambassador program. I played that for a good 5 hours.
Yeah, I played a good amount of that too. I played Battle Network 4, which is apparently counts as tactics, according to Blue.
That is exactly.
It's still bad. I don't understand what they look how they massacred my boy. Like, I was really getting into Battle Network through like 1, 2, and 3. Like, they weren't perfect games, but like you could see like this general trend of improvement. Some parts had a little too many bells and whistles, but like the core was still there. There was certain things, but like it was coming together more and more, and like each issue I had with the previous game was not necessarily fully fixed in the next game, but was generally improved. And then 4 just like completely falls apart. Like, it seems like it's basically completely different people making the game, right? Like, I don't know. I mean, they were also churning these out so fast. Like, maybe it's just crunch, but like, not all of it is some of it is the localization. I think Battle Network is at its worst when the localizers realize that they have to become puzzle designers, because the Japanese word-based puzzles do not work in English.
Yeah.
And so they have to figure out how to do that. And there have been a few. But there's also just like, there's no localization issue that causes you to consistently have to be like, we put 4 guys out somewhere on the internet. And I had this exact same complaint last time, and it keeps happening. Like, I didn't play the game for a really long time since the last time I talked about Battle Network 4. I just played it again recently, and I re-encountered all of the same there was another thing where it was just go find all these people somewhere out on the internet and then talk to them. You don't even fight all of them. They just give you a word puzzle that the localizers had to figure
puzzle?
Out. That also happened twice, where it was like, this isn't the original puzzle. This is clearly the localizers being like, I guess. like these like riddles where it's like, oh, you know, I'm round and I'm always running, and you want me to stand still is time. That wasn't even a good one. But like, you know what I mean, right? Like those kinds of word things.
I thought you were talking about Sonic.
Sonic Battle Network 4.
Sonic Adventure 2 Battle Network. Yeah, and just also, I feel like the charm of a lot of the characters is just not really present. I feel like from a character narrative standpoint, Battle Network is at its best when you've got, like, that group of friends that, like, all kind of bounce off of each other. And it's really not hitting it. Like, everything is so, like, compartmentalized. The stories don't really lead into each other. They're just kind of like this, then this, then this, then this. I don't know. It's, and the, like, the basic core of the battles is still fine, but they got rid of some of the, they have this weird, like, oh, if you get, like, if you hit an enemy at a certain time, you get, like boost that will double your next attack. But it just feels completely random and arbitrary. Like, it doesn't feel like skill, and it, you lose it so easily. It's basically nothing. They got rid of the best mechanic, which was if you have a bunch of chips you can't use for anything, you can sacrifice them and get more chips the next round. So you don't just have to sit there and, like, wait for your chips to recycle, because you can only use so many. I don't know. They just completely lost the plot. I don't understand. I'm very disappointed, but I want to get through it. I think 5 and 6 are supposed to be better. I think 4 is, from my understanding, is a low point in the series. So I'm hoping it gets better. I am chugging along. I think I got through the first tournament arc and then learned that there was going to be another tournament arc. And I'm like, oh, good. The whole game's going to be structured like this, isn't it? But there's no percentages.
That's good.
I got that going for me, at least.
I feel like, man, why bother with, like, missing, right? Like, I feel like so many things...
Yeah, get lost.
It's one of those things where we talked about this before about on the podcast about, like, how turn-based RPGs aren't, like, really that immersive for being a role-playing game. We're just supposed to be immersed in the story. It's like, why am I playing chess with my enemies? Why am I doing this? Why am I missing them at point blank range?
It's the same with, like, D&D too, right? Like, or games that are sort of based on it, where, like, the worst part of D&D is where, like, I roll a d20. Oh, I missed. Okay, you roll a d20. Oh, you missed. And, like, nothing happens, right? And you've got other systems where it's, like, either, I think Powered by the Apocalypse is probably on, like, the, you know, D&D is in its own echelon of, like, knowledge. And, like, there's lots of people who just know D&D. And then one layer below, you've got, like, the next set of well-known systems. Powered by the Apocalypse, I think, fits in there. And, like, that's one where it's like, you've, the three states are, you achieved what you wanted to achieve, you can achieve what you want to achieve, but there will be a cost, and you fail and something bad happens.
True, but I,
right? It's all,
but I'm gonna counterpoint with it just being, like, the medium of just, like, adding to the medium, because I think missing works better in D&D as, like, since it's all imaginative. It's like, it's, you're playing around with your friends. It's like, oh, look at you. You idiot, you missed. Ha 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 ha. And whatnot. It's so, but when you're playing a video and you, the whole funny thing is that, oh, your character's dumb. You missed the point blank. You fool. Move, and then you move on. And then, but when you're in a video game, you're playing as another character. You're supposed to be immersed in that. In that world, as that character. So when you see them miss, you just look at him and be like, what the hell is wrong with you? He's right there. Just stab him.
Yeah, I see what you mean, right? Like, where it's like, physically, by all intents and purposes from the graphics, it should have hit. Like, but then there's a thing, there's, you know, the letters pop up one by one over, like, miss. I think another thing with D&D, though, is, like, you can, I think what's most frustrating is when you, like, you miss, and then the next best thing to do is just to do that again, right? Like, you're not changing your strategy, it's not updating, it's just, you know, oh, I used this attack, oh, it missed, okay, next turn, I'm gonna do this attack and hope it hits this time. Whereas, like, a D&D, you can kind of, there's more opportunity for you to pivot, change the game state, you know. It's kind of like the a sort of yes and, maybe a no and or a no but. But, like, you're this happens, and now here's how that affects things. Versus you missed, the end.
Yeah.
Like, try again.
Time to die.
But, yeah, I've definitely thought about that, because, like, things like missing in an RPG, right? Like, it's meant to create some sense of stakes, right? Right, you need to have some risk for the reward.
It's supposed to keep you on your toes.
Are there other ways to incorporate that kind of risk that don't just involve nothing happens? Because I think that's the most frustrating part. It's just when nothing happens.
Yeah, I mean,
because you missed.
Yeah, and like, especially as I was saying about like these stakes, where essentially, if you miss, you're basically guaranteed to die. That like you are now down by one. That like, you've got five hits. They've got five hits. If you miss one, you're basically done. You're just waiting to die.
And yeah, that's. I mean, that's another thing about games. It's like, if you're going to be in an unwinnable state, you have to. The game has to stop that. Like. Right? It's like, you know, in Mario Maker where you realize, oh, wow, Nintendo actually puts in a lot of effort to make sure that there's never a situation where you have to, like, quit the level because you can't, you know, a soft lock, right? Where
yeah.
you can't make progress without dying and starting over, right? Like, avoiding situations like that, I think, is really strong. And you're right, like, in a lot of RPGs, if you kind of... You know, what you're really doing is, like, you're kind of balancing... I feel like in a lot of RPGs, you're balancing, like, being too close to the edge, right? Like, you almost die, and then you have the ability to recover back to a safe position.
Yeah.
Right? And then you almost die, and you recover back to a safe position. And so, when, like, things spiral out of control, they spiral out of control really quickly, and you lose. Whereas, like, in these tactic games where it's kind of this slow wear down approach, you can be in a situation where... You won't be able to defeat the enemy before they wear you down, but it's still going to take them a lot of in-game time to actually wear you down. And it's so much worse to give up and start over than to have the game, like, to have you enter the lose state that starts you over.
Yeah.
I feel like, right? Like, making the choice to give up because it is temporally optimal.
Yeah.
Right? Like saying, I'm going to be wasting time if I don't give up. I think that's just a bad feeling in general.
Especially when battles and tactics games take like half an hour or 45 minutes. Yeah. Right? Like they are effectively a boss battle. And so just thinking of like wasting that amount of time. Mm-hmm. And I think another part of it is that, you know, generally in, you know, a regular turn-based, you know, random battle JRPG, you know, there's two kinds of battles. One where you dramatically overpower every single enemy, right? That like you're expected to go through dozens of these, that you're going to have this battle where you can complete it and leave, you know, in a minute or two, and you're just going to go through a whole bunch of those. Or then you get into the boss battle where it's going to take 10 or 15 minutes, you know, to beat this guy. He dramatically overpowers you. Every hit that he takes is not like likely to kill you. Like maybe there's a special move that you kind of have to, you know, it's telegraphed, right? They're like, oh, they're preparing their attack. And then, or, you know, in like Final Fantasy, 4 or whatever, they have the countdown and it's like 5, 4, and you're like, oh no, I need to start healing. And then some, you know, big thing happens and then, everybody, maybe two guys die, but you can kind of recover like in the next several rounds and there's like a strategy to it. But in tactics games, you know, or especially from Mission First Remake, again, it's similar to Pokemon where like Pokemon is balanced where you are fighting other Pokemon. Like they are like you. They are the same things as you with equal stats to you because you can also fight other actual people. Like the whole thing is like, these are things that you can have on your team. They could be on their team. They could be on your friend's team. And so the robots in Front Mission are balanced very similarly to your actual robots. So they are doing damage similar to you. And again, like, if I'm going to be shooting back and forth with this guy, if I miss one shot, then that means that he's going to win in four rounds. You know, like, if it takes five...
That's a good point of like when it's explicit, like, because I feel like in other situations you could have games, right, where it's more like XCOM, right, where like, you know, the enemies are very different and have different, like, so you can have these asymmetries.
Right.
Where, like, you could still consider it, quote-unquote, balanced, but there's asymmetries in the thing, so it's not like you're both trying to do the same thing and whoever gets lucky wins, right? Like, there's some strategy and maneuvering about that. And like with Pokemon, how Pokemon gets around that is that there's so many of the Pokemon that even though like you could have any of your opponent's Pokemon on your team, but you only have six and you're not going to be, you know, it's not optimal to have the exact same ones as your opponent also. So you're never like, if your opponent uses a strategy that like defeats you, you had that, the option of that strategy, but like the, at the opportunity cost of other strategies, yeah. Right? And that variety helps keep it feel like, you know, oh, I could be equally matched with any opponent. And maybe I just don't happen to be this time. Whereas, like, it sounds like in Front Mission, you don't think they have as many Front Mission guys as they have Pokemon, it sounds like.
Man, and that's the thing is, like, the later games, like Front Mission 4, do have some interesting variety in, like, the things that you can do, right? You can have different backpacks that like can do special stuff. Like one is a disabler that like, oh, you can use it to like shut down, you know, their arms so that they can't shoot you, or shut down their legs so they can't move, or that kind of stuff. One guy might have a healing backpack that repairs people, and you can like opt to have different characters do special stuff like that. Whereas in the original Front Mission, it was pretty much just whatever you can load onto this guy. Do you want him to shoot machine guns? Do you want him to shoot missiles? Right. And then like later in the game, you just get super overpowered. It's like every character has, you know, a missile launcher on each arm and like, a shotgun in each hand or whatever. And just like whatever's the most powerful, just blast completely through. But that came at the end of the game, right? That came towards the end when you started getting too much money and you could just like load out everything. But like it pretty much was every character still ends up being the same, where there are some skills, like some people use hand-to-hand better than shooting, or some people use missiles better than
but it's all percentages
in the end, and it's really, yeah. It's not actually really that different if you use it, like if this guy's punching at 90%, is that really any different than shooting at 90%? It's just kind of a graphical difference, right? In the end.
Mm-hmm. Did we get through your bullet points, Jetty?
I didn't even get to the part about like sand attack, right? Like status effects and how.
No, not sand.
Wait, is there also sand attack? Is this a Pokemon analogy?
This is an analogy with Pokemon about how like
okay, I was gonna say, like, is there also a, like, you pocket sand
there's
that also lowers your accuracy?
It's coarse, no, and rough, and irritating, and gets everywhere.
It's more of an analogy where, like, again, sand attack is annoyance if an enemy chooses to use it on you, but you will rarely opt for sand attack except in like very specific scenarios. Like if you are lucky and it works on the first round and then they miss, then you can try it a second time, and if it works on the second time, then you're doing a great job. Right now, mm-hmm. Your weak Pokemon has a chance against this powerful Pokemon because the enemy is going to be missing, but in most scenarios it's far better to just hit them, right? Mm-hmm. Like,
right, it's basically only useful, you know, and that's why it's on all like the low level Pokemon, right? It's basically something that you can like, really the main use case of it is like your Zigzagoon is going against a Nosepass, and it's not going to be able to do any damage to the Nosepass, but you could get it throw off a sand attack, and then when it faints, throw off a bunch of sand attack, the next thing can come in and have a better shot at doing some damage.
Right.
Without having to, right? So, and like, that's sort of the cost benefit. It is interesting that most of the accuracy or evasion related moves are banned in competitive Pokemon. I don't know if you knew that.
No, I didn't know that. But the thing is like,
they have like raise your evasion, which is more powerful, because lowering accuracy you can fix by just switching out. But raising evasion is kind of more permanent.
No,
and there's also not a lot of tools to lower evasion or increase accuracy.
Because I'm thinking about, like, similarly annoying things where, like, you will never use poison on a normal enemy in a JRPG, right? That, like, you're going to kill this enemy. Like, poison is annoying for you when you get poisoned because it lasts outside of battle. But if you poison an enemy, you might as well have just attacked them. Like, it would have been better to just attack them because you're going to do more damage in that hit and contribute more to killing them than poisoning them. And then the boss is immune to poison. So it's like, why bother? Right. Like, it's only a detriment to you in all scenarios, whether you're using it or it's being used against you. It is only negative for you. And it is funny that, like, in the original Front Mission, there weren't really status effects in that way. But in Front Mission 4, right, you do get the backpacks and you can do status effects. But when they have that same percentage issue, right, and it's like, would I rather risk missing with this status effect or just shooting the guy?
Yes.
If the guy is only going to die in, like, 3 shots anyway, why would I bother with the status effect? As fun as it might seem, and, like, there are maybe some scenarios where you have a very powerful weapon that, like, oh, if I could just disable it, even if it takes me 2 rounds, it would be worth it because then they're disabled for 8 rounds or whatever. I don't know. Polish seemed to be a bigger thing in earlier video games. I would say
Are you back in my dang us, Jetty?
I'm just saying, Front Mission first remake was not very well polished.
A lot of people agree with you on that.
Yes.
Yeah, I also wonder, like, it's also interesting because, like, even if you wanted to hide those percentages, it'd be a lot harder to do it nowadays because everything would just get uploaded to a wiki.
Yeah.
And then everybody would have the same complaints. Right? Yeah. Like, I don't know. It's different. It's different thinking about in the new context, right? Where things can be so hyper-optimized and also people can, like, talk about their own builds, right? You can kind of solve video games in a way you couldn't. I mean, like, you could still do it, but it wouldn't be so easy to access other people's solutions, perhaps. I don't know. I feel like tactics games have always kind of struggled to find a footholding, and a lot of the standout ones have something other than the tactics that kind of carry it through, like Fire Emblem having these relationship things that happen, right?
What are those? Or,
right, like how it's like a dating sim and a tactics game, right, basically? Yeah. Or like Mario and Rabbids, where it's got this, like, funny crossover and cartoony style kind of mixing it. I bet also it feels less bad to if Mario's goofy cartoon gun misses than like you're and then he's like, oh no, he's gonna get hit with the hammer on his head, versus like, oh man, my comrade who's been with me through thick and thin is gonna get shot and explode.
This highly trained mercenary
be dead forever.
This highly trained mercenary has been on 4 tours and has been shooting people for 40 years
and
of his life.
Yeah. 3 days from retirement.
Miss.
Yeah.
Oh, well, get him next time.
No, so, I mean, maybe we can discuss this on the next podcast or something, but part of it was also that, see, like, oh man, I have all sorts of things to say about, like, the challenge of a game. Essentially, like, all games are puzzle games in a way. It's just like the puzzle being how do you do the most damage the most quickly, right? But Mario versus Rabbids was like, there were some explicit puzzle levels, but also like it was very like, number one, I think that the levels were just a lot shorter, so like you don't get that frustration of one of my guys died in the first round and so now I have 45 minutes to sit through and just kind of pray that I still win, or making it through 45 minutes into the thing, and then at the end, just like everybody suddenly getting one hit killed out of nowhere for some reason. If it's a 15-minute level, it's not as bad, right? Like, you know, if it's just 10 minutes that you've invested, and you also kind of, like you were saying about, you played this level and you lost, so now you know that, like, oh, there's a boss that comes out in, you know, the 5th round or whatever. when it's not as like story related, right? Like in Front Mission, it's going to be like, whoa, the big reveal. Oh no, the boss, it's that guy that you've been seeing all this time. He's here now and he's shooting you. Whereas like Mario versus Rabbids is like, well, now there's a big rabbit. Yuck. Whatever. Like,
and Goofy.
It's just a little bit of silliness.
Mario X Rabbids X Kingdom Hearts.
Like, it's just a bit of silliness. So like, it doesn't hit you that like, yeah, I know he pops out in the fifth round or whatever. It's like, okay, yeah, this guy, I've seen him before. I think that's part of the thing is, again, also the Mario vs. Rabbids, as you were mentioning, it's not a linear game. You get to pick the levels to a certain extent that you're going to go do. There's flexibility. You get like different weapons and different options. There's ways to mix it up other than just I'm going to grind and level up and hopefully, like with my knowledge that the boss shows up in the fifth round, I'll be prepared for it. I'll make sure everybody is standing right there when he shows up and can shoot him. I don't use all of my missiles, and so I have them. It is much more of a puzzle game, in my opinion, right? Like, more like for being a tactical game, right? The concept of the tactics, like exactly what you're going to do in that, like, how much actual tactics do you use other than I'm going to shoot the guy with the gun, right?
Yeah. What's the strategy?
Somehow there are more tactics actually involved, like the puzzle of it, the actual like logic being used was more important in Mario versus Rabbids.
You're sending me down kind of an existential spiral about like what is a tactic?
Yeah.
Right? Like what's a tactic?
What is
like,
a role? What role are we playing? Am I playing the role of Mario in Super Mario Brothers?
Am I Madden and Madden away?
Am I does it make you feel like Mario, Jumpman Mario?
Yeah.
Like, are you supposed to, immersion is like a whole other category, right? Of like, what do you mean immersive? Because like, for some people, some people find Tetris immersive. Mm, and it's like, yeah. No, it's not, I think I am four blocks falling down.
I am
like
the black man.
Hacks and slash.
I was just going to say, I've read this one before.
But like you zone into it so much that you're not thinking about anything other than the video game. Whereas like other immersive things are like, I'm thinking about this as if the character making these decisions was me. And even like, it's interesting how like even in cases where you are kind of limited, if a game like sets things up so that the linear thing you're supposed to do feels like the natural thing you would do, then it can kind of feel immersive still. But then like, so going back to the original point though, like we have tactics games and we have strategy, and it's like, do those words mean anything or did they just get kind of randomly assigned to a particular category of video games, right? Where like tactics is like these grid systems and percentages, and strategy games are like, you know, civilization and resource management and like one long campaign instead of one long several hour campaign versus like multiple 30 to 45 minute campaigns, like specific scenarios. Yeah, I feel like we've kind of existentialed ourselves out of the discussion.
I am also concerned about, you know, entering, you know, our two or three of the podcast as we can.
This is going to be the tactical. I don't know what I'm going to name this, but it's going to be tactical. I'm going to make the little Joseph character have like one of those complicated night vision head goggles.
Yeah. I have a question for you, Joe. How is the trailer for Sonic the Hedgehog 3? How is that tactical?
Incredibly tactical, John. Incredibly tactical. They released it. Get this. They showed the tactic was they showed certain parts of the movie that they thought would make people want to watch the full movie. And I would say that they were fairly successful on that front.
They also tactically timed certain shots to the music, and they tactically used like some measures from the song Live and Learn from Sonic Adventure 2. I don't know. It was very well thought out tactically.
They tactically cast Keanu Reeves as Shadow the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
So that people would talk about Keanu Reeves being Shadow the Hedgehog.
And they
I mean, it seems good. Like,
it was a very fun.
There's not a whole lot.
It was a very, very fun trailer. I was shocked with the tone that they were going for, because the other one's like, oh, fun adventure, woohoo. This one's like, I'm going to kill you, Sonic.
I don't think it went quite that far. I feel like you're overstating it a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm
They were very limited on what Shadow the Hedgehog was actually doing. Instead, aside from punching the main characters, I think it does seem like they are going to dramatically depart from the story of Sonic Adventure 2.
I don't know. We still got a glimpse of his canon event.
Yes, that I think is going to be included in some way. But I think it's going to be slightly different.
Oh, it definitely is, because the last two were different.
But they were very clear. Like, they showed certain things, right? Like a spaceship. It was funny that they called him an alien. I wonder how that's going to go. I don't know if that's, like, meant to be a plot point versus they don't know that it's, like, Shadow the Hedgehog and the government, like, sends them. Well, because it doesn't start with Sonic being arrested and mistaken for Shadow, right? Yeah. Like, that doesn't seem to be an angle in this at
no,
all.
No, it's not.
Are we going to get City Escape? Are we going to get City Escape? Like,
I'm sure someone will escape.
Are we
going to
roll around at the speed of sound? Hello? Hello? So,
I'm don't quote me on this, but I'm pretty sure in the other movies, the humans refer to Sonic as an alien as well.
Oh, maybe. Okay. Still. I think we'll wait for December. You know, it's still a while away. I'll probably have a Sonic movie watch party. Should I skip the Knuckles TV show? I feel like I should.
A lot of people are.
I didn't like it very much.
A lot of people have.
I want to know if I'm going to get anything out of the Knuckles TV show that will in any way affect my viewing of Sonic the Hedgehog 3, the movie.
Probably not.
I feel like the answer is no. But they did me dirty with Guardians of the Galaxy 3, where they're like, here's this dog from a short, from like a Christmas special short.
It was not
that
a short.
Never seen before. Or I don't know. What
it was like a mini movie. It was 20 minutes.
Oh, mini. Hey, you know what's a synonym for mini? For things that have length? Blue.
Shorts are like typically like the, there's the I Am Groot shorts, and they're like 5 minutes at most ish.
The only thing that shorts typically are comfy and easy to wear.
Yeah.
No.
Talking about Pokemon.
I'm glad Jetty knows more and more about Pokemon so he can get my Pokemon references.
Okay. But I mean, that was from the first game, right?
I know that's an earlier one, but like, it's a button on a larger Pokemon conversation.
To put this debate to rest, I have some facts for you. The Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special is 42 minutes long. That's to be considered a feature film, full-length film, it has to be 45 minutes or longer. So therefore, the Holiday Special is considered, by definition, a short film. Thank you.
Which is different than a short film. Colloquially.
Yeah. Oh, for God's sakes.
So, Joseph.
Mm-hmm. I already talked about the video game I've been playing. So that's where you're going with this.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've talked about the video games that I've been playing recently.
I already did my Battle Network diatribe. So, Blue, you played a video game?
The closed beta for Marvel Rivals was earlier this month. Other than that, it's final season, and I've been doing a lot of homework and studying.
How tactical was Marvel Rivals? How many tactics did you use?
Oh, at least one tactic.
Are you going to share that tactic with us, or
you shoot the enemies until they're not good anymore, or you shoot your friends with healing balls until they are good?
I see you've read The Art of War.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is half a joke and half like what most of the actual advice in the Art of War sounds like. Because like the Art of War is a book written for like people who don't have the internet, right? And B, like, don't know how to do war. Like, I wonder, I know there's like lots of jokes about like, oh, video game, people play video games and they, you know, you play a video game where you drive a car, you think you could actually drive a car. I do wonder, like, there's certain elements of strategy where I feel like if I was like a nobleman who had never done anything and then had to lead an army into battle, I feel like if that nobleman had played some tactical video games, he might be a little bit better. He might learn if the Art of War, if the information contained in that is information that did improve, was things that they did not already know, then I think some video games could accomplish some of the same information transfer, right? Do you get what I'm saying? It's not that video games are elevated in this sense. It's just that the bar as defined by the Art of War is so low.
Later on this week.
Video games might be able to cross it.
Later on this week.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
No. Later on this week, we're going to hear a report from Nintendo Japan where they say, hey, we got this parcel in the mail. It's just a copy of The Art of War, and it says from Joseph Martin.
Playing Fire Emblem, but I can only use advice from The Art of War.
That's our next hit game cooler series. Let's do it.
It's a hack and slash game. Oh, my gosh.
Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
How can people find this?
Hey, wait a minute.
Did John get to talk? He didn't get to talk about the video game he was playing.
I thought that he got to talk about the game he was playing, so that was good enough.
Joe, I gotta take this train. I mean,
oh, sure, you leave when I have to actually talk about
something. Oh no, I left the motorcycle on the train!
I'm gonna mute myself. Good luck.
So, John, what video game did you
play? Oh my god, Joe, I'm so glad you asked. Thank you. Recently I've been getting back into the Kingdom Hearts series.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I managed to 100. I wanted to get all, since KH2 is one of my favorite games now. So I just wanted to be like, you know what? I want to platinum this game. So I put up with all the gummy ship missions that are in that, mm-hmm. which is just basically for some reason the game shifts genre and it's now a shoot 'em up game,
mm-hmm.
which it's not popular with many Kingdom Hearts fans because it's like, oh yeah, why would it be? You put a friggin' shoot 'em up game in in an action RPG. It's like, yeah, that's not. It's like putting a horror game into a Mario game for a minute. It's like, why would you do that? But after
side eyes Luigi's Mansion and looks at John like
as a mini game within the main game. Anyway, but playing it and actually figuring out how it works and how the upgrade system works and how the controls for the menus actually work, it's actually pretty fun. Yeah, I had a great time like going for the platinum trophy in these missions. But it was very short though. So I decided to go back to Kingdom Hearts 1 and do what I have not been able to do before, which was
win.
Win against Sephiroth on the hardest difficulty. And after much tactics of leveling up and getting every single item in the game, getting to the max level 100, I was able to tactically brute force Sephiroth into dying.
How many chapters of The Art of War did you have to read to do that?
If you somehow pronounce The Art of War as the Kingdom Hearts fandom wiki, then many, many pages.
It's a very strange regional accent, but all that.
But yeah, no, the fight was, jokes aside, the fight was actually extraordinarily fun to learn. And and just like dodge him at the right time. I wish I recorded footage of it. I probably would have put it on the channel. But the but yeah, it was very fun. And like the amount of damage you do at level 100 was like mind-boggling. It was like the amount you would do against a normal boss in a normal playthrough. He also has like two invisible health bars at the time. So it's like when you hit him for the first like 20 times, his health doesn't go down. You're like, okay, what am I doing wrong? But no, you just have to just keep hitting him because they didn't program two extra colors of health bars into this one. But yeah, it was very fun. I even then did the gummy missions in Kingdom Hearts 1. And luckily those trophies only took 30 minutes to get. And they were actually kind of fun and relaxing after frantically trying to fight against Sephiroth for a few times. So it was a nice little change of pace. But yeah, but to platinum the game, I have to go through it again on the hardest difficulty, trying to beat the story in less than 15 hours and not use a single continue or change equipment. So that'll be fun, and I'm looking forward to it. Any questions?
My question is, how can people find us?
I'll give you the secret tactics.
Oh.
To find us. I mean, do they need tactics to find it? Like, they're listening to the podcast. They found something, right? First of all, keep doing whatever you're doing. However you found they're listening to this podcast, there's other stuff. If you're listening on the podcast feed, there's other podcasts. There's a lot of past podcasts. You've got Hacks and Slash. You've got RPG Cast. You've got like Space Quest and Secret of Mana on the website. If you're listening on the little article and you can click the little MP3 player and play it. We've got articles. We've got some reviews. We've got the video game awards that we did in the middle of summer because that's how we do things at Game Cola. If you're on the YouTube channel, we've got YouTube videos. We've got live streams. We've got some fun stuff that we're planning for October and also maybe earlier. But there's some October-y stuff that you might want to look forward to, right, Jetty?
Yeah, there's at least one big holiday that happens in October that we celebrate every year.
Mm-hmm. And it's not the Hallow one. Yeah, I mean, those are the main things. You know, podcast is on iTunes. Just search Game Cola or Apple Podcasts, I think is what it's called now, or any other podcast player. If you search Game Cola and we're there, you'll find us. GC.net, YouTube channel, letter G, letter C, the word dot, the word net. Join us on the Discord where you can see funny pictures. You can see people be like, look, it's the Sonic the Hedgehog 3 trailer. What did you think about it? There's stuff like that. There's like, hey, look at these video games. And you can be like, wow, those are video games. And I can say something and then you can all respond to it with the Martin Joseph react.
Yeah.
And just leave me completely confused as to what that means.
Yeah.
It's going to happen regardless.
That's I think that's everyone's favorite thing to do.
Yeah, you
on the Discord.
And then respond to something else with the Joseph Martin react. And mm-hmm. then you have to try to figure out why one, even though it was basically the same joke, one was the Joseph Martin react and the other was the Martin Joseph react. Yeah.
Mhm. There are no trains on the Discord.
I'm sorry. Except for train buddies. I have to show everyone why trains rule.
Jetty, am I going to hear... How many modes of transportation are near you? Am I going to hear a boat in the next 30 seconds?
You could. You could.
Occasionally you hear helicopters. Man, there's... I need to share pictures of it. There's these guys who come by in, like, paraglider. Like, it's the parachute glider that you have with, like... a big fan that you wear on your back and you just like fly around with it.
I'm convinced you live near a military base.
I'll have to share pictures. If you come to the Discord, you can see pictures of weird paraglider guys who fly around near my house. Dox me.
Come dox Jay. Yeah,
if you can tell by the sky that I was looking at where I took pictures of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
You can find out where I am.
Well, they also know that there's a train.
Yeah.
And a motorcycle.
And potentially a helicopter occasionally.
Yikes.
Yeah. There's only a few places that have those things.
Yeah.
Military base.
Jay lives in the military base that Shadow the Hedgehog is from. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Game Cola Podcast. Have a wonderful time of day, wherever it is, whenever it is, whatever train you are riding.
Whenever you're rolling around at the speed of sound.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wherever you've got places to go.
Whatever tactics you're using.
To follow your rainbow.
I use tactics for that.
See you next month. Goodbye.
Goodbye. And then just add the AOL goodbye.
You did a really good impression of it.
Goodbye.